Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions this evening, Aurelia Siskin from Benguela Global Fund Managers and independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha. Don't forget to send us questions. You can SMS 41392, you can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Aurelia, Jimmy, good evening to you both. You're both in the grip of load shedding, so thank you very much for joining us this evening. You could say that the mood was pretty dour and grim on the markets. Jimmy, if I may start with you, but at least it wasn't, you know, 2 or 3% weaker. It was a slight decline on the All Share Index today. And I saw one comment on the FT saying it feels like a make or break time for the markets. And I think they're referring to what the Fed might do in the course of the week. Do you get that sense as well?
Absolutely. I mean, not just from the Fed perspective, we've got about 13 central banks this week meeting. So everything from Switzerland to Sweden, Norway, South Africa included. Of course, all focus is on the Fed because they have been sort of that leading voice around the interest rate conversation, and the trajectory that they would then give would give guidance to what we can expect from the rest of the world. We did also see earlier that China actually dropped their rates, surprisingly enough, ahead of all of the news coming out this week. So there's definitely a sense in the market especially on the equity side of things, that a wait-and-see approach is much needed at this stage. Sitting on your hands rather than jumping too quickly into stocks is very important at this stage, because what we could see coming out of the Fed is we could very well see that stocks might take or might move up slightly about 10% or so, and then might fall another 20% thereafter if the news is not received as positively as we expect. So at this stage, it is a very, very sensitive time within the market, and caution is definitely something that's needed at this stage.
Yeah. Rilla, I mean, Jimmy is talking about sitting on your hands. I mean, do you think that is the case, or do you actually hear the great big sucking sound of money coming out of equities and going into fixed income assets? Or just being sucked out of equities and waiting to be plowed into fixed income assets? I mean, is that really the trade of the next few months?
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen the last few weeks is really a lot of volatility. So, you know, so much sort of market movement in reaction to Fed rate hikes in reaction to inflation numbers. So, I mean, I think they definitely are the traders that are benefiting. But it's about, you know, from our view, it's taking a long-term view. So, you know, what is going to happen over the longer term? And finding places within equity markets that will outperform other sectors.
Where do you think those places or areas are? I mean, do you think are there any obvious areas for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious one is probably your more staple sectors, which will see sort of more stability going through a recessionary environment, your food retailers, food producers. And then also, I mean, more on a global perspective, those sort of big brands that are able to pass through price increases, which will sort of help offset some volume decline as you see consumer demand come under pressure. Other sectors of the market which may be adding some value or giving customers more value at this point are things like the telcos, where you won't see demand drop off too much. And as we see data prices coming down, sort of more usage there, so with higher traffic volumes sort of helping profitability in that sector.
Jimmy, your thoughts? I mean, Rella didn't mention one area which might be the luxury goods sector. Which I wonder, I mean, you know, you can pass on amazing, you've got huge moats and huge margins there anyway, and I imagine that they're probably going to be quite resilient throughout this period.
Absolutely. I mean, what we saw during COVID was the luxury sector and the luxury goods market actually outperformed expectations during COVID. We did see that there was a sharp increase in luxury goods and in the demand for luxury goods during COVID. I think at this stage, Rella's sort of narrowed it down to quite a good space around what we should be looking at. I'm sort of more impartial towards your financial stocks, your tech stocks, your telecom stocks. And the reason around that is you want to be staying away from spaces that are going to be continue to be affected by certain things. We've seen that there's been cost push, inflationary pressures on certain spaces, actually across the board, and we've also seen that in the space where it relates to things around goods and certain consumables, there have been supply chain disruptions. So you want to be staying away from potential companies that could be affected by supply chain disruptions on a larger scale. And if you look at telecommunications companies, you look at fintech companies, you look at financial stocks, banking stocks, and that sort of thing, a lot of that is service orientated, and the service side of it will continue to have a demand in the stage because people will continue to use those services. They're not reliant on, if you take an example, Apple as an example of a stock, Apple's reliant on their semiconductors and their chips arriving on time for their phones to be manufactured on time, to be put in the hands of consumers on time. Whereas if you look at a telco company, as Rela mentioned, the data services are there and readily available. Other companies like Alphabet and Meta have got cloud services readily available, even though they are sitting at all-time lows at this stage, well, yearly lows rather.
Yeah.
You're still seeing that there's certain spaces where you want to be avoiding as much disruption as possible, particularly in times like this.
Yeah. Rela and Jimmy, but I'll go back to you, Rela. We were marveling last week at how weak the banks were. And one of our viewers was saying that if you've got interest rates increasing, there's this endowment effect that the banks get. You're not going to see, I suppose, a huge increase in bad debts immediately. And yet the banks have been whacked. Is it because people just sold everything or sold their winners or just got out the market indiscriminately, which is why you saw, in particular, the banking stocks take such a beating? Or are there other factors there that maybe we're not taking into account?
I think it's probably a bit of a combination of all of that. The banks have done extremely well over the last couple of months, and there probably is some profit taking to be had. I think there's also the concern around sort of loan growth. So while there may be the benefit coming through from increasing interest rates, you've got expanding NIMs, and as you mentioned, the endowment effect, sort of lower expectation on your loan book growth certainly will put a dampen on earnings growth for the banks. I think it's good to look at those banks that have a higher exposure to your non-interest revenue. As Jimmy was talking about, being more parts of the business that are more service orientated and not necessarily based on your loan book growth. Other than that, I agree with him in terms of that the banks are an area that, you know, could find some protection in this environment.
And Jimmy, just maybe before I get to questions, just on the banks, Pitfall Yudin actually tweeted quite an interesting chart talking about how you want to buy good businesses at a decent price or even moderate to sort of mediocre businesses at a great price and not necessarily great businesses at a great price. And I think his particular focus was on FirstRand, which has always been lauded as the best banking group, but it's actually underperformed some of the other banks in the last couple of years. Do you think you have to be quite particular in which stocks in these sectors you have to go for, that you'd rather go for the stocks that are have had very underwhelming share price performances relative to those that have had quite strong share price performances in the past?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you can look at those because they do present a certain level of value, and some might be trading at a discount to their peers. But I think what you also need to take into account is in times of extreme volatility and extreme stress and anxiety within the market, you might find that you're better off putting your funds within a blue chip stock, paying that little bit of an extra premium, but you know that the particular company that you're backing has got a history of a solid performance in turbulent times. So they are always going to be pockets of opportunities where you can pick up a really undervalued stock in a really good sector that might be trading at a better valuation to it, some of its peers, and that might be in for some great upside. I mean, I'll give you an example of this. Is a stock I've given out in the past, is City Lodge. It's come off of highs of as high as 140 Rand a share. It's trading at 4 Rand a share. It is a ridiculous discount at this stage, and they do still have good assets within their portfolio. And you look at a stock compare that with a stock like Southern Sun that's released or that's having an AGM this week. We are expecting results imminently, I think. And the performance of Southern Sun, it's up about 10 to 15% depending on where you got in on that stock. Mm. It's performing better than City Lodge, but City Lodge is arguably at a discount you can't seemingly ignore. And that's just one example in one space. And I mean, you're going to find those sorts of spaces or those sorts of stocks within every sector you look at. Another sector that you might want to be looking at might, as a dark horse sector, might be the mining space. And that would be just purely because of the commodities pricing that we might see. As demand is stretched, or as supply is stretched to meet demand, you might find that commodities prices might go up. We know that there's obviously other factors around things like oil and the Russia-Ukraine tensions that you that might affect your stocks. But if you're looking for value within stocks, it might not always be the greatest idea to go for the top company, but it might not be a bad idea to go for that average performer who's been able to pay a consistent dividend, who's been able to stay afloat, able to turn a profit or turn from a loss back into a profitable state, especially coming out of such a tough period that we've had as the last two or three years.
Okay. There's a question that's come through on one, it's an energy/mining stock, but it's very small. So I understand if neither of you would follow it. Kibo Energy, is this a share that either of you look at? And sticking with, apologies to our viewer. There was also a question that came through earlier asking about Brimstone and Choppies. And I know that they're also not closely followed. Rilla, have you had a look at either of those in the past while?
No, unfortunately not. I know Choppies, I mean, in their latest results, they posted quite a strong recovery in earnings. And I know, I think they got quite punished after they reported their financials late, I think about a year ago. But beyond that, I don't look at it closely, unfortunately.
Mm. Jimmy, do you have a look at Choppies or Brimstone at all? Brimstone is, I suppose, a fairly, it's got an established B investment company. It's been around for ages, and it's got quite a few listed assets as part of its portfolio.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the choppy side of things, as Rela mentioned, they are expecting to have a bit of a good recovery. We're expecting that profits are going to come in higher than expected. Headline earnings per share as well as basic earnings per share are going to come in almost doubling there in that range, depending on when those numbers come out. But as yet, we haven't yet heard anything there. On the Brimstone side of it, they've had a couple of fairly decent announcements recently around the Oceana business or the Oceana subsidiary. Their Sea Harvest subsidiary has done really well for them. Locally as well, they've had a couple of other businesses do fairly well in terms of numbers. Overall, I think Brimstone does present itself with somewhat of an opportunity. I mean, the stock last I checked was sitting at about R6.39. Whether or not that opportunity is a short to medium term opportunity is another story, because as we said, we're looking at the supply chain side of things. And if you look at a subsidiary like Sea Harvest, for example, I mean, they went and spent, I think they spent about $765 million acquiring an Australian business in May of this year to streamline their supply chain problems, particularly around some of their, I think it was around licensing and fishing around the prawn space there. And you see from that sort of business decision that companies willing to spend that much money to avoid supply chain disruptions really do see this as a serious concern for them. So from Brimstone at a group level, I think some of their companies might struggle within the coming short to medium term, but overall you might find that if they do have some of their other local investments that are able to sort of offset against that or provide a profit against that, they might continue to do sort of fairly well in that space. I mean, they do have, I think they've got another reinsurance broker under their umbrella as well that they have as part of their group. But I think overall, I would still approach with caution looking at the factors that could affect a stock like Brimstone.
Yeah, questions have been very slow today, and I think that's quite telling, Rilla and Jimmy, about well, not just the load shedding. You know, if you have power, maybe you're thinking of doing other things like washing or having a cup of coffee. But it's also telling about the state of the markets. And I wonder if you are sort of bracing yourselves for indifference or just general reluctance from anyone to actually dip a toe into the markets at this point. I mean, really, it kind of goes back to where we started the conversation this evening. What do you think?
Yeah, I think ultimately, I suppose we're waiting out for better entry points in the markets. I think there probably will be some softness to come. And we want to wait for that, you know, for real capital allocation when valuations are looking slightly more attractive and we can really pile into higher quality companies that would usually be priced at higher valuations. And I think the market is likely to take us there. Over the next couple of months as we do see higher interest rates come through and inflation probably sort of easing off at a slower rate than initially expected.
Jimmy, I got sent a question for the Financial Mail's personal finance section, the money section, asking what currencies you would diversify yourself into. And other than the dollar, which is sort of the obvious contender, it's kind of, it galloped. I mean, the dollar has blown everything before it, to the detriment, unfortunately, of our own currency. And we hit 17.75 at one point today, which felt ghastly. So firstly, would there be other currencies that you might consider? But having said that, with the rand where it is, particularly against the dollar, and I suppose against the euro, would it be a bad idea to exchange any rands for any sort of overseas currency at this point in time?
Well, I think from a rand perspective, it's a precarious position given that we are back near, I think the last time we saw these highs was around March, April of 2020, sort of when we went into the initial level 5 lockdown and that sort of thing. And today, I think I saw highs of around 17 rand 79 on the dollar. Okay. Against the dollar. So I think it's very, very tricky at this stage to look at alternative currency. And if you look at the rand, it's still, even at the valuations that we're seeing now, it's still one of the best performing emerging market currencies against the dollar. And that's really telling of where the global economic situation is. We know that internationally, something like the Chinese yuan has recently come off of some good levels. It's broken a key psychological level. And that was largely off the back of the interest rate cut that we saw today. We might see some recovery in something like the Chinese yuan down the road, given that their direction and their policy stance is completely the opposite of what the rest of the world is doing at this stage. And that is an extreme situation that could potentially lend itself to some opportunity down the line. However, that is still very dependent on whether or not they engage with Taiwan and the concerns around the war that, or the nuclear weapons or the attack that they might have on Taiwan or they might impose on Taiwan. And so for that reason, I wouldn't necessarily put funds towards that. I think if you're looking for currencies or if you're looking for investments that are outside of the equity space, you may be better off in the short to medium term looking towards the bond market and treasury market. And the reason for that is as I mentioned earlier, we have 13 central banks meeting this week. We even have the Swiss central bank expected to raise rates for the first time in a very long time there as well. So you might find that some of the treasury notes, whether it's the shorter term 3 to 5 year notes, are offering you a better return than the currency space. It is very difficult at this stage to identify a developed market currency. And then even harder to look at an emerging market currency, given the high levels of inflation we're seeing all around. I mean, we've got Brazil's interest rates sitting at about 13% already. We know that South Africa's interest rates are expected to go up by possibly 75 basis points as well, following the US's 75 basis points. And if we see that happen, it's expected that the dollar strength we'll see will outweigh the rand strength from that rate hike. And you might see that the rand will not strengthen below the 17 rand level as we might expect it to off the back of that rate decision on Thursday.
Yeah. Rilla, I mean, does this mean that we just cower where we are? You know, if you have whatever you have in your currency basket, you just keep it as is? Or you know, Jimmy's kind of sketched out, I suppose, the whole scene for us. And it is quite terrifying to think that the Rand is one of the best performing emerging market currencies this year. I suppose maybe what we can say for ourselves is that we aren't Turkey. There's a thought, and that should make you feel better about life, right?
Or Argentina. You could add that to the list.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to another question. Firstly, Thungela. Your thoughts on Thungela? They're going ex-dividend on Wednesday. Is it worth a punt to buy? Stock's up 400% this year. Rela, you know, there was some... I think there's been a lot of gaming around the fact that you could buy the stock in expectation of the dividends. Would that be sort of slightly foolish at this point with a couple of days to go, or in fact, canny?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I think if you haven't been in Thungela up until now, it probably is too late to be entering the trade. It's really a call on the coal price and how prolonged Europe is going to be in this energy crisis that they find themselves, whether Russia is going to maintain sanctions for a much longer period of time. And yeah, and if they don't find alternative sources for energy, I mean, we're seeing the energy crisis is beyond Europe. I mean, we're seeing China as well with the lack of hydropower, so coal demand coming from there. But I think a lot of that sort of elevated coal price is certainly already in Thungela's share price. And now it's about taking a longer-term view. And maybe taking a controversial longer-term view on whether that coal price will stay at high levels.
Mm. Jimmy, do you have a view on this?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with Rilla. If you look at Thungela, the stock started the year off just below 100 Rand a share. We're sitting at about 375 Rand a share at the moment. We've done 12% in this month alone. It's at this point, it's a very dangerous level to get in. You're sort of getting in at all-time highs for Thungela, but also at a rather high valuation. We know that Thungela announced that they saw somewhat of a 700% increase in demand for coal within Europe. But again, Rela alluded to this earlier, is it's going to be dependent on that demand and whether or not they're able to sustain and meet those demand levels. I mean, we know that there's that European embargo that will be going on Russian oil at the end of the year. That will obviously put more strain on the energy demands of Europe, given that it will be European winter at the time. Mm-hmm. However, I would not advise getting in at the high levels that we're seeing at the moment on Thungela without... the only reason for that is your downside and where you'd have to sort of look to potential retracement levels is quite significant. As I said, we started the year below 100 Rand and we're already above 350 Rand at this stage. So yeah, there would be some room for retracement at some point, and you don't want to find yourself buying in at 375, the stock retraces to say 250, and you're holding onto that position until it gets back to 375 maybe a year from now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that dividend's not going to make any difference if that is the case. Then Coronation, it was actually, we discussed it last week, I think it was Wayne McCurry's stock pick, he was just saying it is just so ridiculously cheap, but the question that came through is, would you buy it, and will they be able to maintain the dividend? Rilla, I mean, even if your performance fees are smacked by what you're seeing transpire in markets, I imagine that Coronation is still pretty cash generative and has a policy to pay out most of its earnings. So I would imagine that it would be maintained.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. The levels right now are very cheap. It is, from a quality point of view, it's one of those sort of higher quality companies that we have on the JSE. Really high returns, very cash generative. I don't see any sort of risk around a lack of a dividend being paid. Ultimately, the likes of your Coronation and your 91 are really a geared play on the market. So it's very much telling about what people think of equity markets, over the short term. You could say, I mean, that's about timing, you know, when the market's going to bottom, and then that would be the best time to buy those stocks. But at valuation levels like now, I think it's still very attractive. Yeah.
Jimmy, very quickly before we get to stock picks, Coronation at the current price, I mean, that makes the dividend yields that much better if they do maintain it. So I'm sure it might be crimped a little bit if the earnings drop, but do you think it's a steal?
Yes. It's sitting at around 30 Rand a share. We know that it's reached 120 Rand a share. Obviously, that was pre-COVID. It was around 2015, I believe. But we've seen that in recent times, it sort of tipped the lows of about 24 Rand. Where we're sitting at the moment relative to what Coronation could potentially achieve for a long-term stock pick, this is an ideal level. It's an ideal entry level. It's a good time to start averaging in. So even if it does dip a bit lower, it's unlikely we'll see it come below the 20 Rand share price at this stage. And I think it's a very good place to start averaging in.
Okay. Well, getting to your stock picks this evening, and Jimmy, sticking with you, what would you be looking at?
It's very difficult to give a stock pick out at this stage with the expected volatility we see. I'm going to go with much like Coronation, something that looks very similar in structure, that is a safer bet that Rella alluded to earlier around the telco space, MTN. We 130 has always been a good price to sort of get in at, but we saw today we got as low as 126. I think we might even tap 125 in this week potentially, which would be a very good entry price to get in at. And it's a good long-term hold given MTN's performance in South Africa, their performance in Ghana, their performance in Nigeria, so throughout the continent, as well as the potential for that telecom acquisition if that does go through in the coming months.
Okay, great. Jimmy, so MTN for you. Rella, how about you?
I am going to go also with quite a safe pick and allude to what I spoke about in the beginning within the food retailers. I'm going to pick Pick n Pay. I think the entry levels at this point or valuations aren't stretched at the moment. I think it does provide some stability going through this tough economic environment. The key real driver behind the pick is that I do believe that their change in strategy to differentiating their store base to directly talk to different customer groups, I think, is very positive for a recovery in returns. So basically, they're going to be driving more turnover from the assets they have, improving asset turnover, hopefully being a key driver of their ROE over the short to medium term. And also in their latest results, they showed very competitive like-for-like volume growth. So taking some of the market share that they've lost, and this new strategy continues that trajectory.
Great. We shall leave it there. Rella, Jimmy, thank you very much for joining us on this dark Monday evening. Much appreciated. Rella Suskin is from Benguela Global Fund Managers, and Jimmy Moyaha is an independent analyst, and Bright is back with Stockwatch tomorrow night, same time, same place. Have a good night.